Hello again, kings and queens of the ring. It's Pollo Del Mar, and you are listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar, your weekly pro wrestling podcast with a slightly queer twist. I am back with episode 9, and we have a phenomenal interview with former WWE superstar Brodus Clay, also known during his tenure in Impact Wrestling as Tyrus. He is going to be telling us all about his dramatic transition from Brodus Clay to the Funkasaurus, as well as explain his departure from Impact Wrestling. You're not going to want to miss this one because he reveals a reason for his departure that he has never shared in any other interview he's ever done. That's going to be a one-hour interview that takes us on the range of topics, covering his position as a Fox News color analyst on the Greg Gutfeld show, as well as everything from his professional wrestling career, his thoughts on Snoop Dogg working with Martha Stewart, as well as memories of Sasha Banks before her tenure in WWE. If you want to skip my wrestling recaps and get right to that, just fast forward on to minute 46 of this podcast. Plus, let me quickly plug right now, you will want to subscribe to this podcast both on Facebook and Twitter. You can do that at ADT with PDM because next week I have with me an exclusive interview with the current reigning WWE SmackDown Women's Champion, the Queen herself, Charlotte Flair. That's right, Charlotte Flair is going to be on with me next week talking about her new book, Second Nature, growing up as the daughter of Ric Flair, what it's like to lead the women's evolution in WWE, her record-making matches with Sasha Banks, so much more, not the least of which is going to be touching bases on and telling us what to look for on the upcoming December 14th episode of WWE Tribute to the Troops. I'm Pollo Del Mar, you're listening to Arm Drag Takedown, and we'll be back in a minute with our Arm Drag Takedown of this week's televised wrestling products. If this is your first time tuning in to Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar, you have missed our exclusive interviews with the likes of Austin Aries, former WWE Champion Jack Swagger, Impact Wrestling Hall of Fame Knockout Gail Kim, Impact Wrestling and Amazing Race star Robbie E, former Knockouts Champion Sienna, reigning Ring of Honor Television Champion Kenny King, Lucha Underground's Cobra Moon, and much, much more. To never miss another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar, follow the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. Find us at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Welcome back, everybody. It is time now for the Arm Drag Takedown of this week's Monday Night Raw. Things kick off as Kurt Angle comes out to address the crowd, only to be cut off by his son, Jason Jordan. It's obvious that the crowd is really not feeling this Jason Jordan push to some degree, but in terms of WWE creative, that is actually a good thing because at least the kid is getting some response. Roman comes to the ring to confront Jordan and Kurt Angle, saying that Jason Jordan's not the one he wants to meet in the ring. He wants Samoa Joe, who, if you recall correctly, and God knows that they showed it enough times to not let you forget, Samoa Joe attacked Roman Reigns last week with the Kotakina clutch, putting him out. Meanwhile, as things escalate in the ring between Jordan, Angle, and Reigns, they are cut off, of course, by Samoa Joe. As Samoa Joe has distracted the Intercontinental Champion, Jason Jordan sneaks up from behind, hits a belly-to-back suplex to get the champ's attention. Of course, Roman Reigns responds by insisting that he face Jason Jordan that night for the Intercontinental title. Well, as the match progresses, Samoa Joe watches on. Jordan puts up an incredible fight against the champion. This is doing wonders for the kid. If you are wondering exactly where they're going with this, go review old tapes of how Kurt Angle got over initially. He was green, he was presented as this Olympic champion, but he had a fighting heart, and he came really close to upsetting some major stars of his era when he first launched, before he finally got his big win. Clearly, that's where they're going with Jason Jordan. As it turns out, Jordan puts up a great match, going toe-to-toe with the champ, but after a Superman punch, about the third one in the match, and a spear, Jason Jordan is pinned, leading the way for Samoa Joe to head to the ring to take on Roman Reigns. Well, as Samoa Joe puts Reigns in a coquina clutch to once again put him to sleep, boom, from behind, Jordan attacks, disrupting and causing a three-way confrontation between the men. Ultimately, one thing leads to another. It's every man for himself, and Samoa Joe attacks Jason Jordan in the back as he's demanding, much to Kurt Angle's frustration, a match against Samoa Joe later in the night. Up next is the returning Paige, accompanied to the ring by Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose, The Absolution. For her first match in over a year, Paige is set to square off against Sasha Banks, accompanied by Mickie James and Bayley. Remember, of course, The Absolution attacked the three women just 2 weeks before. It's interesting to note that during the course of this, WWE SmackDown Women's Champion Alexa Bliss is on commentary, and they're questioning which of the women involved in this match or at ringside could pose a future challenge to Bliss's title. I thought it was so on point when Michael Cole suggested that perhaps it could be Sasha Banks, to which Corey Graves quite rightfully responds, "How many chances does Sasha get?" He goes on to point out the fact that Sasha is a four-time women's champion and has yet to successfully defend the title even once. I couldn't agree more. No wonder they had to bring up three women into the roster, because Sasha as a challenger is staler than week-old bread, honey. Time to move on. The women give us a lengthy back-and-forth match, which one must say was mostly owned by Paige, but nearing the end, Banks manages to put Paige in the bank statement, only to have her escape to the outside with the help of her friends. Now, once Paige is returned to the ring, all hell breaks loose outside with the four women backing up the two combatants, which allows Sasha to be distracted just long enough for Paige to hit a vicious boot to the face and put her away with the Rampage. After the match, Absolution picks the bones off a fallen Sasha Banks as Alexa Bliss makes tracks for higher ground. It's obvious, the announce team says, that she realizes how much of a threat the three women are to her championship. Up next, we get backstage segment with Elias, who put up a great fight, remember, recently against Roman Reigns. I think that things are looking up for this man. He promises a musical performance later in the show before we go to a literal 10-minute recap of Kane versus Braun Strowman. We then go to cruiserweight action as the stars of 205 Live, the Zo Train, good God, are getting berated by Enzo Amore, the cruiserweight champion, for their loss last week, allowing Rich Swann to go on to possibly challenge for his championship. After he sends the men to the ring to redeem themselves, he turns around to find none other than Nia Jax standing there, and she asks, "How you doing?" Well, let me tell you what. It's obvious that they're putting Nia in this romantic slash comedy angle with Enzo Amore, because currently she is not part of the women's division in terms of in-ring action. They don't have an angle for her. They don't have a storyline for her. If she were to be placed in with the Absolution, she would obviously have to either join the group or face off against them as a possible victim of their three-on-one attacks. That would ruin any heel heat she has, and or it would stunt her growth as a potential challenger for the title. Instead, we're going to see her wrapped up and possibly appearing on upcoming episodes of 205 Live as things develop between her and Enzo. To be completely honest, I would much rather see Nia Jax beating Enzo's ass for the cruiserweight title than I would see her in a romantic angle with the guy. whatever. As long as she's on TV, if she's happy, I'm happy. If she likes it, then I love it. Back in the ring after an extended back and forth, around the way match between four of the top cruiserweights in the company, Drew Gabagulak picks up a victory to face off against Rich Swann next week in the finals of this eight-man multi-match tournament, if you will. It's a really chintzy version of a tournament to determine who will be the number one contender for Enzo Amore's cruiserweight title. Meanwhile, my baby daddy Cedric Alexander almost got it in, but he was cheated by Mr. Gulak. Better luck next time, Cedric. We get a preview of an upcoming episode of Total Divas where Lana and Rusev are deciding whether or not they're ready to have kids, but Rusev shuts it down and Nia Jax is all awkward. I don't watch that show, so I have no idea what the fuck is going on it. It goes without saying at this point that of course Elias doesn't get to finish his musical number when he is interrupted by none other than Braun Strowman. After Strowman no-sells a guitar shot from Elias, he power slams him in the middle of the ring and then throws the ring steps in, presumably to repeat the action on Elias that he did to Kane last week. Only thankfully for Elias, the Big Red Machine interrupts with a video promo for next week's confrontation between the two in the ring, allowing Elias to escape, presumably to fight again another day. While clearly sent to the ring as the next sacrificial lamb for Asuka, Alicia Fox puts up a pretty decent match against the Empress of Tomorrow before finally tapping out to her armbar. This sets the stage for Absolution to return to ringside, staring down Asuka, but they don't make a move on the Empress, who instead backs slowly up the ramp, only to have Absolution surround Alicia Fox. But Paige gets into the ring and confirms that Alicia was the only one who was nice to her the year before when she was still with WWE, and that she personally loves her. Unfortunately, Mandy and Sonya don't feel the same, so Absolution destroys Alicia Fox as the announce crew announces that nobody is safe. We get a preview of Charlotte Flair on the upcoming episode of Psych, or in the upcoming Psych movie, which, please note, next episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, we will have as our special celebrity interview, Charlotte Flair, the SmackDown Women's Champion, is going to be on with us talking about all of the things relating to her career, in particular, her brand new book, Second Nature, which she co-wrote with her father, the nature boy, Ric Flair. So be sure to tune in for that. Out next, it's going to be Finn Balor facing off against Bo Dallas of the Miztourage. With The Miz currently gone, The Miztourage is floating a little bit free here. I love Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. I think that they really need to be put into a team and allowed to face off, or at least contend for, the WWE Raw Tag Team titles. That division could use an influx of new talent, or at least top contenders, and I think that these guys have a great chemistry and above average pedigree in terms of where they come from and what they could accomplish together. I also find it really interesting to note that WWE apparently pulled the plug on the Sister Abigail versus the Demon King storyline between Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor, only to sub him in against Bray's biological brother, Bo Dallas, this week. Of course, Finn picks up the victory as he moves forward in his quest for, apparently, from what I've read on the internet, a write-in campaign to face off against Brock Lesnar for the WWE title, perhaps at the upcoming Royal Rumble. The next segment of Raw is one that fans have been waiting for, it seems, since the Hardys returned to WWE at WrestleMania. We see a finally awoken Matt Hardy, who has reached his breaking point, if you will, during his feud with Bray Wyatt, or at least during his confrontation, and what happened over the weekend at a live event in Utah continues on to Monday Night Raw as we get an awoken Matt Hardy who calls for the deletion of Bray Wyatt. It was a really amusing, very amusing, to be honest, back and forth segment where they cut from one interview to the next, and we get the ramblings of two crazy men who I think could be putting on or prepared to put on one of the most entertaining feuds in current WWE memory. But I still have to say, 2 seconds before, we saw Finn Balor out in the ring with absolutely no mention whatsoever of his previous feud with Bray Wyatt. I mean, you guys are putting them back to back on my TV and expecting me not to remember that we never got the payoff of Sister Abigail versus the Demon King? What the fuck? I guess that's WWE logic for now. Finally, in the main event, it's the former WWE Raw Tag Team Champions, The Shield, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins, taking on current reigning three-time champions, The Bar, for the titles. It turns out to be a no-disqualification match made by Kurt Angle so that we could get a definitive winner, only as The Shield are about to pick up a victory about 20 minutes into a pretty incredible tag team match, who bombards the ring but Samoa Joe, laying out both members of The Shield as a way of retaliation against Roman Reigns. Well, then here comes the Intercontinental Champion, Roman, hitting the ring, landing a Superman punch on Cesaro, before following Samoa Joe outside the ring. In all of the mayhem, it would seem The Shield have a great opportunity to pick up the titles. Only, as it turns out, Sheamus returns to the ring, lands a brogue kick, and they pick up the victory over Rollins and Ambrose, retaining the tag team titles. This sets up not only possible tension within The Shield and further heightens things between Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe in Joe's pursuit of the Intercontinental Championship, it also heightens tension with Kurt Angle, who the announce team clearly illustrates in its commentary is fully responsible because he made this a no disqualification match. That ends this week's Arm Drag Takedown of Monday Night Raw. Overall, it was a pretty damn good show. I have to give them props because in recent weeks, business has been picking up on the red brand, and let's find out what's going on the blue brand. This week's Arm Drag Takedown of SmackDown Live kicks off with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in the ring gloating about and putting over last week's victory over the Viper, Randy Orton. As you may recall, Shane McMahon made a match between Kevin Owens and the Viper with Sami Zayn barred from ringside. Well, the men go on and on before Sami finally details for the viewing audience that his attack on Orton last week came well outside of ringside, so they used Shane McMahon's words against him to come out on top in this war. Well, as Zayn is distracted by Shane McMahon, who enters at ringside, Orton slips into the ring and hits an RKO out of nowhere onto Kevin Owens, laying out the former multi-time champion. Meanwhile, Shane announces that Owens and Zayn will face off against Orton and a partner of his choosing at the upcoming WWE Clash of Champions, and then makes a match between Zayn and Randy Orton for later in the show with a special stipulation that Kevin Owens will be handcuffed to the ring ropes. In a backstage segment, Kevin Owens is asking Sami Zayn what the hell happened out there, and Zayn is left to explain that Shane McMahon plans to have him handcuffed to the ring ropes later during his match with Randy Orton. Only Owens comes up with a genius plan. He is going to go talk to Daniel Bryan. Then we hit to the ring with Rusev and Aiden English as they prepare to take on the New Day, who are looking to keep up their momentum as they head towards a triple threat match between Shelton Benjamin, Chad Gable, and the WWE SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions, the Usos at Clash of Champions. To be honest, it's about damn time that WWE SmackDown Live brought in some new contenders for these titles. I would almost rather see Aiden English and Rusev challenging the Usos at this point, because I feel like the Usos versus the New Day versus Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin are already played out. It feels like it's been going on for months now, and certainly in terms of the New Day and the Usos has been, but Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin do very little for me, and I think that it would do very well for the company to spice this division up. I'm calling for the Authors of Pain. Bring them in now. It is 100% worth noting that the San Diego audience chanted Rusev Day, Rusev Day, by the way, as Aiden English prepared to sing his 12 Days of Rusev. And later in the match, the unlikely duo of Rusev and English picked up an upset victory over the New Day. This really, as commentary team points out, upsets the balance and the momentum of New Day heading into Clash of Champions, and they question what might be in the future of the New Day and whether or not this makeshift or random teaming of Rusev and Aiden English could be the next hot team. Well, I'm still calling for the Authors of Pain, but thank God there's something new in the mix. Up next is a recap of the disintegration of the Hype Bros. Well, let me tell you something. I couldn't give a damn less that this team is gone, but I will confess that while Mojo Rawley is trying to put himself over as a single superstar based on his win of the Andre the Giant Memorial Cup Battle Royal at WrestleMania, that doesn't do a lot for me. The fact that he cut a halfway decent promo backstage, though, speaks volumes of the growth he's made, because I used to not be able to stand when the guy opened his mouth. Things are looking up, perhaps, for Mojo Rawley. I still don't see him as a bona fide superstar, but at least on his own, he probably will move somewhere into the upper middle card and away from being a tag team opening act. What this leaves for Zack Ryder is yet to be seen, but we all know that Zack Ryder always bounces back from adversity. In the locker room, we see a conversation between U.S. champion Baron Corbin and challenger Bobby Roode. The Glorious One is going to face off against the U.S. champion later in the show, and at Clash of Champions, both Corbin and Roode will step into the ring in a three-way title defense of the U.S. championship, with Dolph Ziggler added into the mix. Ziggler joins the two in the locker room and says that he's going to be watching their match later in the show and that he will see them both in Boston when the title's on the line. It should be apparent to anyone who's watching, Ziggler has been added to this three-way dance at Clash of Champions to allow Corbin to retain his title. Ziggler is going to be the scapegoat in this match, make no bones about it. He is going to take the pinfall. I predict that Corbin will retain his title. Having put that out in the open, we then go to a match between Baron Corbin against Bobby Roode. They barely get 3 to 5 minutes into the match before Dolph Ziggler, who is working on commentary, slides into the ring to zigzag Roode and then turn around and zigzag Corbin as well. Remember what I said a minute ago about how Ziggler's sole responsibility in this is to prevent either Roode or Corbin from being pinned cleanly in this feud? Well, we have our first example of it. Ziggler gets to look good for a minute, knowing he has prevented either Roode or Corbin from having to get a cheap victory over one another or a pinfall loss. Ziggler, you are a saving grace. Big things are on the horizon for Bobby Roode. It's been announced from the start of his push on the main roster, and I look forward to watching it continue to grow. I suspect by WrestleMania, he will have a championship around his waist. That said, if I had my way, by WrestleMania time, Ziggler would be free of his WWE contract and working the indie scene. I think that, like Cody Rhodes, he has hit his stride on the indie circuit and is the current reigning Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion and a bigger name than he has ever been at any time in his career. Ziggler has the skills and tool set to do exactly that. Could you imagine a match between Ziggler and Johnny Mundo or Johnny Impact in Impact Wrestling? Could you imagine a match between Ziggler facing off against Cody for the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship? These are matches that would be incredible, that would have never been given the opportunity to shine in WWE. Fingers crossed that Ziggler gets his release soon. Backstage, we see Natalya talking to Carmella, Lana, and Tamina about what she expects from them as she faces Charlotte Flair for the WWE SmackDown Live Women's title at the upcoming Clash of Champions in apparently a lumberjack match. Now, Tamina has an upcoming match against Charlotte later in the episode, and Natalya promises to watch her back if the three women will have her back at Clash of Champions. Natalya also reminds the women that before there was such thing as the Riot Squad, the Welcoming Committee was the originators of SmackDown Live, and she needs them to watch her back as well if the Riot Squad decides to attack. Well, guess who walks up behind them? Of course, it's the Riot Squad. Natalya sweet talks them before walking away, leaving three arriving members from the NXT roster in a stare down with Carmella, Lana, and Tamina. Moments later in the ring, Charlotte Flair takes on Tamina, making the second generation superstar tap out to the figure eight, only to have Natalya berate her on the microphone. First and foremost, I am going to say I am obsessed with Natalya's ring attire. She looks fucking phenomenal. But as Natalya's running down Charlotte, I don't know if you could hear it at home, but I could definitely hear Charlotte says, "Keep talking shit, bitch." Clear as day. I rewound it and played it again and played it again. "Keep talking shit, bitch." Oh, I wish I had a soundbite of it. Anyone with half a brain, of course, knows where this is leading. Before tempers can flare too much between Flair and Hart, who should come to the ring to disrupt but the Riot Squad? Ruby Riot is leading her crew out as they're talking mad shit to the women at ringside. As the women surround the ring with Flair in the middle, all hell breaks loose as Tamina attacks Sarah Logan, and Charlotte backs away up the ramp as she stares at the women who are responsible for being her lumberjacks. Or is it lumberjills? Anyway, they're going to surround the ring, and the announce team asks whether Charlotte will be able to avoid the distraction and defend her belt against Natalya at Clash of Champions. As we head towards the main event of the evening, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn hit up Daniel Bryan once again to ask for his verdict in their appeal of Owens being handcuffed to ringside. Sorry about it, guys. Daniel Bryan upholds Shane McMahon's declaration. Kevin Owens will be handcuffed to the rings as Zayn faces Randy Orton. Well, after a great back-and-forth match, which sees Zayn several times almost pull off the victory, Orton wins with a simple roll-up, and almost immediately after, without any explanation whatsoever of how Kevin Owens got loose, Owens and Zayn attack Orton in the ring. Who should come out to make the save? It'll be no surprise to anyone who's followed recent SmackDown teamings, because it's Shinsuke Nakamura out to save Randy Orton. He lays out Owens and Zayn with a series of knee strikes as Shinsuke and Orton reign supreme to end this episode. Were I to give this episode of SmackDown a letter grade rating, I would probably give it a solid C, perhaps a C-. It was a little bit repetitive, it feels like, of past episodes with very limited amounts of progress. And honestly, having Shinsuke and Orton close the episode does very little for me. Compared to the A- or B+ rating I would have given this week's Raw, clearly the Red Brand wins out over SmackDown in this week's Arm Drag Takedown. As we move forward towards Clash of Champions in just 2 weeks, with my interview with WWE SmackDown Live Women's Champion Charlotte Flair scheduled for next Monday, that's December 11th for those of you listening at home, I look forward to finding out about her feelings about facing off against Natalya in this Lumberjill match, as well as the incoming talents from NXT on both the Raw and the SmackDown brands, plus much, much more. Remember, that is going to be on next week's episode, episode 10 of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Now let's head over and take a look at this week's Impact. This week's Impact Wrestling kicks off with a high-octane video recap of the last several weeks of the product, which shows that not only is Impact suddenly filling up with a breadth of impressive talent, but it also showed unequivocally that Alberto El Patron should never be unleashed in front of a camera without a scripted promo. This is why WWE does scripts, because Alberto seemed to wander all over the place in a promo that did not excite or entice me to watch the rest of the show. But thankfully, it did not deter me. This has turned out to be the second episode in a row of Impact Wrestling, which has really done wonders to bring the product back in line with what needs to be happening as the show progresses forward. We kick off in-ring action with a match between Taji Ishimori facing Caleb Konley from the Cult of Lee as their feud continues, which obviously is moving Ishimori towards an X Division title shot against champion TJ Lee. It was a great, great back and forth match between both rising superstars, with Ishimori ultimately picking up the victory. After the match, TJ Lee and Konley attack Ishimori, only to have Desmond Xavier, the winner of this year's Super X Division Cup, run to the ring to make the save. This is clearly going to set up future tag team match between the four men, but let me tell you, X Division action is at a peak right now, and both Xavier and Ishimori, despite the fact that Ishimori looks like he's 3 feet tall to me, that's an aside, are both valid contenders for TJ Lee's championship. The Knockouts title tournament continues as it's Allie, Rosemary, and former champion Sienna in a three-way match to advance to the finals to face Laurel Van Ness next week for the Knockouts title vacated recently when Gail Kim retired. It was a solid, well-paced match between the three women, which ultimately saw Rosemary pin her own partner, Allie, to advance. Backstage after the match, Allie approaches Gail Kim and apologizes for letting her down after Gail's big endorsement of her at Bound for Glory. Well, Gail gives her a pep talk and says, "No, you have not let me down. This is the farthest and fastest I've seen anyone in the industry come. This is your time." And Allie leaves going, "This is my time. This is my time." My question here is, for any fans who have followed Allie's career prior to Impact Wrestling, we are aware she's a very skilled in-ring athlete. At what point are they going to finally make the jump from having her as the gullible former assistant with a lack of self-esteem into a talented, skilled professional wrestler who holds her own in a Knockouts division that is filled with other highly capable women, including the newly added Casey Spinelli, who we saw last week in her three-way match against Laurel Van Ness. That transition from hapless former assistant to real contender is important in the future development of Allie as a character, and I look forward to Impact Wrestling pulling the trigger on that transition very, very soon. Meanwhile, we go back to the ring with OVE and Sami Callihan out. These men are now hated heels, apparently, in Canada, which, to be honest, as faces, OVE were fairly impalatable to me, but Callihan is out spitting real fire in his promo, running down the Canadian audiences, running down the Mexican wrestlers who are part of Latin American Exchange, and saying that they are Ohio versus everyone. Well, as they are trash-talking Ottawa, out comes TBT, apparently a local Canadian-based tag team dressed as pseudo-lumberjacks to confront them. The men cut a promo in French before laying in to OVE, only to have the numbers game become too much after Callihan returns with a kendo stick to take them out. Out comes LAX to make the save at a pivotal point and run off the Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions, OVE, and their new leader, apparently, Sami Callihan. This sets up for a future tag team rematch between OVE, the former champions, LAX, and we return to the backstage area as Conan cuts one of his typical rambling LAX-style promos about how they're moving some cartel into this. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but honestly, just the addition of TBT to the tag team division has me a little bit inspired. If, in fact, Impact is going to be based in Canada for the foreseeable future, adding a popular and capable team like TBT to the mix is only going to improve what has been an otherwise pretty dire situation in the Impact tag team division. I say build this company's division up and let us have something new. It's nice that OVE and Latin American Exchange, LAX, are reaching a fevered height right now, but including new faces and new talent into the roster is only going to help with the credibility of either team as champion and as things move forward. And by the way, I'm sitting here calling this team TBT. It's quite possible that they're actually TDT. I don't know. I've never seen them before. I can't remember. But it does not matter. Having a new set of faces in the tag team division is only going to do good for the viewer. KM continues to try to prove his worth to America's top team by entering the most bizarre-looking strip mall gym I've ever seen and beating up a bunch of jabronis, none of whom even flinched as he came in beating anyone else's ass. In my opinion, if you're not going to try to break up a fight that's happening for no apparent reason as people are getting beaten up, you deserve to have your ass body slammed onto your workout partner. In a backstage segment, global heavyweight champion Eli Drake and Chris Adonis cut a promo about the challenges placed towards Eli by both Johnny Impact as well as the returning Alberto El Patron. Apparently, the group now has a faction name, which is DNA, clearly Drake and Adonis, but it also seems like the perfect name for an outstanding faction, perhaps with some second generation athletes included. Get it? It's in their DNA. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that like I discussed last week in episode 8 with Chris Adonis in our exclusive interview, if you didn't listen to that, go back and check it out, that maybe Impact is going to build out this faction to include others. I think that Drake would be a fantastic lead for a four horsemen-like collection of talent in the company. Up next, it's EC3 defending his Impact Grand Championship against Matt Sydal. Leading up to this match, Eli has been taunting Matt that he is unable to win the big one. Sitting on the judges panel for reasons yet unknown is one of my personal Impact favorites, Fala Ba, who in recent weeks has been feuding with or on the verge of feuding with EC3 for the Grand Championship. As it turns out, EC3 dominates the first round. Sydal takes round 2, and then in round 3, it's a back-and-forth confrontation, which sees the judges split. One judge giving the round to EC3, one giving it to Sydal, and Fala Ba making a tying decision by giving it an even score of 10-10. EC3 retains the Grand Championship, and what, of course, is going to come from this is a series of matches between all three men, presumably, feuding over the Grand Championship belt. As long as Fala Ba is in the title hunt, or at least in a prominent and featured role on Impact, I'm a happy camper. Big thumbs up for Impact Wrestling finally discovering a talent, 400 pounds of which has been hiding under their nose for the last 6 months. As we prepare to see James Storm and Moose face off against Lashley and Dan Lambert of America's Top Team in a tag team match upcoming, we flash back to a classic match between James Storm and former tag team championship partner Bobby Roode. Of course, Bobby Roode is making big waves over in WWE right now, and you can just scroll back in this podcast to hear that I'm predicting huge things for him by WrestleMania. But on the flip side of that, it looks like James Storm is on his way out of Impact. The match is a street fight, and it features a whole bunch of flashbacks. We've got Hulk Hogan name dropped as the commissioner of the company. We've got Taz still on commentary. King Mo is just making his presence known in the company as a special enforcer for the match, and things are bloody and crazy. It is a brawl for the ages, and James Storm finally seeks and gains retribution for his former tag team championship partner, who turned on him and took the World Heavyweight Championship in his place months and months before this particular match was filmed. It was a classic culmination of an absolutely iconic Impact Wrestling feud. It's a shame that it looks like James Storm is going to depart the company, but it's good to know that he's given us such fond memories. In the anticipated confrontation between America's Top Team, Lashley and Dan Lambert, versus James Storm and Moose, Moose and Storm really take it to Lashley throughout the match, with Lambert only tagging in periodically in an effort to make a pinfall. After an extended amount of warfare between Moose, Storm, and Lashley, ultimately Lashley hits a spear on Storm, with Dan Lambert tagging in at the last moment to cover Storm for the pinfall victory. Throughout the match, of course, Dan Lambert plays the role of coward, and the announce team plays up very big that this is his first time ever stepping in a wrestling ring. What was amusing to me, of course, is that Dan Lambert clearly is well-trained and well-versed in MMA, and despite the fact that he's never wrestled, one would presume the man can hold his own in confrontations of this nature. And he's obviously very physically fit. He's got a black belt in like various forms of martial arts. Obviously, he has enough skill that he could have performed on some level in this match. They're clearly playing up a continuation of this role. I personally would not have been one bit upset and believe fully, honestly, that this America's Top Team angle should have ended at Bound for Glory. It's going to continue. I've read the dirt sheets. I've read the spoilers. I'm not going to give those here because it's unfair. I know where this is going, but quite honestly, from my side of the street, I think that this should have been phased out. Lashley should be playing a much more central role in this. This should be used exclusively to build Lashley, not Dan Lambert. I don't know the end game on this. I believe storytelling should really lead to something. And wherever this story is going, I do not see the point of building Dan Lambert as some kind of an in-ring persona. Any rub that should be given from anything that proceeds from this point on should be exclusively for Lashley. He is an Impact wrestler. He is one of their biggest names, and he should be getting the credit for anything that's coming. It should be used to build him as a force in the company and build his reputation as a dangerous and viable threat to the World Heavyweight Championship. Speaking of the Global Heavyweight Champion, Eli Drake and Chris Adonis face off against Johnny Impact and the Canadian Destroyer, Petey Williams, in the main event. It's a tough back-and-forth match with a lot of great action. All four men put on a fantastic show. I feel a little bit like Petey Williams is out of place in this environment. Let's relate it to the fact that he's introduced as being 165 pounds. The guy is at least 6 inches shorter than everyone else in the ring with him. Of course, since Impact is moving to Canada, they're probably positioning Petey Williams in this main event level to appeal to home base audiences. But at the same time, Williams came back from an extended hiatus from the company, and it felt very rushed. In the past, with the company, he has only been an X Division style wrestler or a tag team wrestler. I guess it's great that they're allowing him this spot in the main event. It does build out their main event level roster a little bit more, but quite honestly, I would much rather see someone like Moose in this role than Petey Williams. Regardless of that, the match comes to a conclusion when Johnny Impact hits a high spot off the top rope, pinning Chris Adonis. As the faces back away from the ring, who should come from the crowd? But of course, Alberto El Patron to lay out the Global Heavyweight Champion, hold the belt above the ring, and then drop it across Eli Drake's chest as Impact and Williams look on. Tension in the main event continues to build to a fevered pitch as Impact comes to a close. Overall, this was an outstanding episode of Impact Wrestling. It looks like the new management has got some very good ideas and a strong direction is being given to everyone who's currently on the roster. As you will hear later in this podcast during my conversation with Tyrus, which is coming up very shortly, Tyrus strongly feels that continuity and storylines as well as extending the roster are pertinent if Impact is going to right the ship and succeed. I could not agree more. The last two episodes of Impact, though, have been above average for the show. Let me take that back. The last two episodes, with the exception of the horrible Thanksgiving episode, are really on track, and I look forward to seeing what 2018 brings for the company. A quick reminder, everyone, before we go to our exclusive interview with Tyrus now, next week, Charlotte Flair, the SmackDown Women's Champion, is going to be with us talking about her new book, Second Nature, written with Father Ric Flair. It is going to be an exclusive. I'm very excited about it. You will definitely want to tune in. The easiest way to do that, follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on both Facebook and Twitter at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. I'm Poyo Del Mar. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown, and we'll be back with former Impact Wrestling and WWE superstar Tyrus right after this. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter. Find us at ADT with PDM. ADT with PDM. And follow our hostess, Poyo Del Mar, at The Glamazon PDM. The Glamazon PDM. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I appreciate you talking today, and I've wanted this interview since you were still with Impact, and I wanted to, I guess it seems reasonable since that was the last place we saw you, to start by talking about your time with Impact. And you came in with so much potential, and I was so excited for the direction that they might take you, and I was wondering when it became clear that they were going to veer off into left field somewhere.
Right after I won Bound for Gold, Dixie had a conversation about I was ready for a big year. It looks like I was in line to probably win the heavyweight championship, or me and EC3 were going to go into a long feud or something like that. But then the financial crash of the company pretty much happened, and I, from what it looks like, the Hardy stepped in and kind of saved the day to keep the show going. So I think whatever plan was going on at that point, things got changed. I don't know that for a fact. It's just looking at some things when they were doing the shows from North Carolina and stuff like that. So, and then I became very, I've always been a very vocal guy. I always say what's on my mind. I don't really beat around the bush too much. And if I don't like something, it's just a lot of the boys weren't. Let me start by saying this. Dixie Carter is a tremendously special person to me, and she was very nice, and she has a great family and stuff. And I just think that sometimes when things go bad, they just go bad, you know. There's nothing you can do about running a business as hard as running a TV show as hard, you know, and business decisions, mistakes are made. So that being said, creatively, things suffer too. So they did what they had to do to keep the ship afloat, and I wasn't really a part of that process. And also at that time, I had other things going on, so I just showed up, read my script, did my job, did my thing, and then went home. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't one of those guys who wanted to hang out in the office or see what's going on. I'm just professional and do my thing, and I don't ask a lot of questions. But then just a lot of things were happening, moving in place, and a lot of band-aids were put on. So after that, then they sold the company, and then things started to change, and they really didn't know have a direction with me because I was such a presence, and they just didn't know what to do with me, and then certain things I didn't want to do. And then it was going to kind of be a relaunch or whatever. Then I was doing a movie that hasn't come out yet called Supercon. So I skipped TV taping, and I had their blessing from where they were sitting. That was, they thought that my priority had put in Impact. Not as before, I would have not missed an Impact taping. The movie, I would have had to work around it or whatever. But just the lay of the land and stuff, I just thought it was better to do my thing, do the GLOW project and stuff like that than some of the problems. I mean, I was loyal to Impact, and then when Jeff Jarrett and them came along, because him and I have an uncomfortable history, I just wasn't comfortable with the management. I'll just leave it at that. So, and I decided that it wasn't for me anymore.
What do you mean that you and Jeff Jarrett have an uncomfortable history?
Do you remember when Global had first started and it looked like I was going to be working some of his shows? I don't know if you follow that much, but Global had just come up and they were doing a bunch of house shows and stuff like that. That was the first time I had ever spoke to him and seemed to get off on the right foot and stuff. So I was going to do Global tapings and shows because my contract Impact said I could work other stuff. Just the only place I couldn't work, I think, was the WWE or something like that. And
makes sense.
They didn't want me working for Jeff. And I think it was fair. I'm like, it's because of you guys have a personal thing or whatever. And I got to know, talk to him a few times, and he was basically saying that it was better for me to come to Global because Impact was about to fold. So basically it came down to either stay with Impact or I'd go with Global. And I was making more money with Impact, and Global didn't have the resources to pay me what I was making. So I said, with, all due respect and all stuff, I'll stay here and I won't go do the shows because they're telling me they're going to void my contract if I do the shows. And he was very adamant about their folding and all this other kind of stuff. 2 weeks later at tapings, guess whose ass is there working the show? Jeff Jarrett. So I'm like, I was like, bitch, are you crazy? Like, who does that? And again, I'm not a guy who
holds your tongue
to myself.
Yeah.
So I went to Big and I said, don't put me in anything that has to do with Global, because you're going to have a problem. And so EC and I were kept out or whatever. And I just felt that, and I get it, was whatever his dealings were, whatever, I just squashed it and I just realized that we're not going to work together again. I'm not, I don't play the fool me once stuff. It's either once or nothing, So.
Wow. That just comes across as so shady. I mean, it's like when you're definitely trying to undermine it's one thing to play opposition, but it's another thing to be spreading misinformation or actively trying to recruit away from.
If I would have quit, took money out my family's mouth, went there, and then, we're going to have to go work Impact. How would that have gone? You know what I'm saying? It was whatever. And I have no ill will towards Jeff. It was business. I saw through it. But in going towards the future, he's now, when they announced his name, I literally stood and said, well, shit, I'm out.
Yeah.
Hurricane Helms and them had talked to me and they and them like, just stick it out. But I wasn't comfortable unless him and I were going to have a sit down. This wasn't going to happen. I knew that there was this is not going to be a spot for me. You know what I'm saying? And then I just wasn't comfortable with it. I was going back and forth with it because I love wrestling. I love it. It's part of who I am. Most of my success in acting and TV and stuff came from my work from wrestling. So I'm very loyal to, I would wrestle until I physically don't feel I can anymore. I would like to wrestle another 2 years and retire. That was my plan. And I had planned on retiring at Impact. I wanted to wrestle my day and then one day go out on my shield and maybe come back and call some stuff or whatever, And I didn't feel that way anymore. So I did the deal where I talked to him on the phone about some creative stuff and they were telling me a bunch of stuff and we're going to do this and blah, blah, blah. And I just felt like it was bullshit. I mean, just keeping it real. And I finally said, I'm not getting a straight answer. You're telling me I'm doing this and doing this. So that I went on Instagram, I took a knee since I couldn't get a straight answer from anybody. And that's when I started talking with Ed Norton, who took over. And Ed is a great guy. He's a gentleman. He's a good dude. And Impact is in some good hands with him. And I just basically warned him. I said, listen, I can't fix my situation with Jeff, but basically I was just like, you need to be careful. Like, you need to be careful with these guys. And then what, 2 weeks later, after I was done or after the TV tapings, the stuff went down, whatever went down in Mexico, and hopefully he's getting help and he's taking care of himself now. But for me, I was just a wrap. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just had to move on. Which is, it's frustrating because because of the way my acting career is going right now and the success I'm having with Fox News, it's not like I can go wrestle in Japan for a year. You know, like, the States impact was really cool for me in terms of scheduling, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely.
Even if going back to the WWE, there would have to be some wiggle room, and the greatest wrestling company in the world doesn't necessarily have to wiggle for anybody, you know what I mean? So I can still continue to do, because I can, I'm not planning to do Fox News until I can't remember anymore, you know? So it was a tough decision to make, and I've never really quit anything. I've stayed in situations that weren't necessarily benefit for me, but you do the job and you do the craft. But that just felt like, to me, sometimes it's better to take your ball and go home than, you know, mess around and end up getting in trouble for, you know, throwing somebody in the crowd or something.
There's so much there, but I want to go back because you mentioned that at one point in time, it looked like it was going to be a long program between EC3 and you, with the strong possibility that you were going to have the opportunity with the Impact World title. And that, by any standards of wrestling viewing, is exactly what should have happened. Like, the whole, we got an entire build towards that. And then, in typical fashion, I am a longtime Impact fan and still support the company. I still want it to do well, which I know that you can understand. It's just about expressing frustration as a viewer, like, you built us for this payoff and we never got it, and that pisses people off. And it's got to piss people off from the inside, too.
The product. But at the same time, Matt had a great idea and he kind of saved the day. So, I mean, I get it. It just wasn't handled probably the way it should have been. But, like I said, it is what it is. I don't look back on it. But me and EC3, I think we had one match. We had, like, a last man standing match and on tables and stuff, and it ended up, like, piling a bunch of stuff on me or something like that. But, like, that's the only payoff we got. And then they tried to kind of recreate that with me and Matt. And there were some funny moments, like carrying the baby to the ring and stuff like that. But I think, yeah, the fans are kind of like, what? Why are you getting stuck in this role? You know, and then at the oxymoron part is I was being so successful in other things. So, you know, it's just one of those things where there was a lot of stuff going on, and it looks like things are settling down there now, and they're starting to get a plan together. And, you know, I wish them nothing but the best. I just have to decide what I want to do, because I'm not done wrestling yet. It's not over. I get frustrated, and people ask me if I retired and stuff. I'm like, no. I went hard for 7 years, you know, and right now I'm just getting my train on and getting in the best shape that I can be, and knocking it out of the park with Fox, and I got a new project starting up called The Doorman. I'm doing that with Katie Holmes and Jean Renault. I'm going to be filming that in Canada. And then Blow's coming back, and Preacher's coming back. And so I got a lot of stuff on the table right now. So just trying to stay focused. But my mind, I want to definitely get back in the ring. I'm like,
what is it going to take, in your perspective, to get this ship right-sided, you know, get it right back on track and everything for Impact?
I think they got to start over. I think they got to move operations out of Orlando, in my opinion. I would definitely run in Canada right now, because Canada is more, like, they don't have a steady flow. WWE tours through there, but doesn't do a lot of TV stuff through there. So building a base in Canada is probably a good idea. Or maybe even Vegas or Los Angeles or something like that. But being in NXT's backyard in the WWE's is just not a good move. You can't compete with the glitz and glam, you know? So that would be one thing. Another thing, they have to reinvest in their talent. And, you know, they have to trust the process, but don't overthink it. I think that's the biggest thing. go. They need to probably sit down and watch about 100 hours of Mid-South and watch how Watts booked and find a good booker and watch how they told their stories.
Now we're talking, because that's what I grew up on.
Yeah, you put that stuff, you put those stories out there, and I guarantee you it'll be like fly to a light. You know what I'm saying? They will come. When you start to, it doesn't, people get confused now because guys can jump, you know, 20 feet in the air and land through a table and such and so. That's, people forget that. Because you see guys do 9, 10, things like that in a match, and they don't remember half of it. But they'll remember a story. If you give them the Hacksaw and DiBiase Coleman match, and you give them those type of stories, and you give them a guy who builds and stuff like that, and you look at guys who maybe aren't the normal looks, you find your nook. You know, you don't try to recreate what other things are doing, but you just break it down, make it slow. Dusty Rhodes used to always tell me, paint the canvas. Remember, use the same paints that I did. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a simple process. Wrestling fans don't need a lot. They just need it right.
I grew up watching Mid-South. I grew up watching the UWF when it was reborn as UWF. That was what I, you know, those stories to this day, we're talking 30 years later in my life, and that's still my favorite era of any wrestling anywhere. And I've watched, you know, generations of WWE. I've watched generations of NWA. I've watched Impact since it was starting off as a weekly pay-per-view event in a fairground in Nashville. So I've seen all of this stuff, but the classic stories that I remember from UWF and the characters and my favorite angle ever happened there. My favorite wrestler ever came from there. It's, you know, so I 100% would agree that some of the teachings of that generation and that particular product would benefit Impact greatly.
I just think they just need to get back to wrestling 101 and let the reality TV shows do the soap operas, all that stuff. Just get back to wrestling, build a card, and find your niche. You know, and I think they have people in place to do that. And, you know, hopefully that stuff goes down for them, you know.
Out of curiosity, one of the things that in particular that I loved from the UWF generation, and I made this list of questions to talk to you about, and one of the questions is, why is it, in your opinion, that professional wrestling as an industry was so reluctant to allow a 6'9", almost 400-pound athlete like yourself to play an unstoppable monster? And that's stuff that we saw, I remember One Man Gang and all of these people from the UWF and Mid-South era who were that, and why were they so reluctant to let you be that?
I have my theory, which helps me sleep at night, and then I have the truth. When I was being groomed to be brought up, when I was with Alberto, Arn Anderson changed a lot of shirts, a lot of sweaty shirts in the ring with me, and we worked on a lot of stuff, and I was a sponge. But there was also another side of me that would be goofing around with the American Dream every chance I got in the ring. And my personality backstage was like, I'm a funny dude. And sometimes they made the monster because you couldn't do anything else. Everyone had to, you know, you could only go out there for a minute or 2 minutes before you got exposed. And so sometimes that's the misleading thing. I worked hard to be able to work. I had the respect of my peers, Heath Slater, TJ Wilson, you know, guys that work meant something to. I was a student of the game, so when it looked like we started running the stuff or whatever, Mark Henry was coming back, Kane was coming back, show his institution. So you have these three monsters, he's coming back with a mask, Mark Henry's coming back with something to prove, Big Show is, he can go either way, but when he's a monster heel, that's when I think he's at his best. And then there was me. And out of the four guys, I'm the one who didn't quite have the name. I didn't have the name yet. So you can be the fourth monster, or you can be the first Brodus Clay, the Funkasaurus. So Triple H was grooming me to be a worker monster. Like, that's, but I cracked some jokes in the damn locker room, and Mr. McMahon heard it, apparently, and said, he's pretty funny. Are we sure you don't want to make the basics, you know? And I didn't understand it at first. I think when I got away from it, I looked back on it, Dusty Rhodes was all for it. You know, he was like, you know, sometimes, you know, you got to be different to find your way. But the thing is, like, if maybe those three or even two, but you have four guys all doing the same thing, unless you're going to have all three of those guys lay down for me, which they're not going to do, I wouldn't think at that time. So it was about finding my niche and finding a chance to show that I had talent or go sit in developmental for another year and wait to see what happens. And I didn't want to do that either. Sometimes on the fly, you got to reinvent yourself and show that you belong. So it was the biggest challenge of my career, being the Funkasaurus. I kicked ass for Snoop. I did what I had to do. Like, my street rep was incredible. So for me to be that guy was the biggest challenge in terms of being a character and stuff like that. So I took it on and I embraced it. And I don't regret it now, because I can always be tough, but I don't think I could ever in any other situation be the Funkasaurus. You just have to look at things sometimes when you're away from me. Like, you know what, man? They complain. You know, everyone's like, oh, man, I wish you would have been a monster, but they're still tough. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I see kids still to this day, even though, you know, I'm Tyrus now, but I still get the, oh, I like when you did the thing and this, that, whatever. So it was, like I said, in a perfect world, yeah, but it was three other established monsters and not a whole lot of TV time to go around. So I took my shot trying something different.
Yes. Speaking of that Funkasaurus character, one of our listeners, Mike Crockett, wanted to know how much advance warning you got from being taken from that monster, the killer Brodus Clay, to being a Funkasaurus.
24 hours.
Damn.
But then I asked to go see I spent the day with Dusty down at FCW playing music and making me dance with him. And me laughing and yelling at him to leave me alone because I did not want to dance. I was like, it's stupid. Borderline racist. Like, I had all kinds of issues when I was going off about it. Bullshit. Like, you know, I bench 500. This is not fair. And he was like, baby, I had to wear polka dots. I was like, yeah, but you were champ first. But he was like, isn't that worse? So then I got the smartest idea I ever had in my life. I was like, Naomi, because Naomi was kind of stuck. She was stuck in developmental. So I was like, can Naomi help me? Because her and I almost had another gimmick, was the monster push, that she was going to be my voice of reason. And she had a dance background with Orlando Magic, and she could help me. That's how the fun. And then at the time, she was doing something with Cameron. So I was like, cool, the more the merrier, because then, you know, my emphasis was, I want them to be like cheerleaders. We don't want to be disrespectful to women. We want little girls want to be like them. So since we're going to do this thing, and I got a track suit, and I just went with stuff that I went back to and talked to Snoop about it, and he's like, entertain, baby, you know? And Dustin just said, when you're out there, you know what to do. So I was like, all right. And then, you know, a week later, we got postponed, and because I think they were hemming on, like, do we really want to do this? Do we really want to do this? And we got postponed again, and then it just kind of happened. But Road Dogg, who was another guy who was really influential in helping me just understand how things go and would really help me fine-tune the character. He was like, we got to do this stuff. Like, we're supposed to debut in Memphis, right? It's got to be tonight. It's got to be Memphis. Brodus, we go to Corpus Christi next week. They'll shit all over it. It's got to be here. And then they got canceled. And I looked at him, and he looked at me like, Corpus Christi, where's that? Like, that's where the dog was. Like, that was the type of support I had. You know, like, I had to do rehearsals in the closed set, and everyone would come out, and they were supportive. Kofi was supportive. Like, you know, Kurt Hawkins volunteered to be my match. my opening match, you know, because a lot of guys, you know, it really could have been like a shaming, but it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody kind of was like, you can do this, man. You can make this cool. So I was just fortunate to be around a lot of people who just believed in me as a talent. So, yeah, would have been nice to go out and lay out like I was doing on Superstars and having people scared in the audience and everything. Yeah. You know, but I did the best I could with what I had, and I don't. I always thought I could always get a chance to do the Monster at some point. And it looked like things were kind of going that way. And then, you know, things just kind of broke down, and we took a break. Funkasaurus was fun. There was some really good moments, and I don't regret it.
Listener Anthony Carter wants to know if working with all those years with Snoop Dogg's where you got your, quote, sweet dance moves.
No, Snoop ain't much of a dancer. He just kind of bobs his head.
Right, exactly.
I'm a bodyguard, so if I started dancing, I'd probably get fired. So I was to look mean, not look... And I was the worst one. I was the one that was always ruining people's days and stuff. You know, like, I was the guy when people would tell bad stories. Like, this one lady who was trying to get autographs said that it was her son's dying wish to get an autograph from Snoop, and he's at home on his deathbed. And I was like, well, you should be used to disappointment. I mean, that's who I was. And everybody saw it.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? But that was my role. Like,
that's
if you ever talk to Snoop, ask him about, like, he would laugh all the time because he's non-confrontational. I'm confrontational. So I would always ruin people's day. That was my thing. I didn't mind being the guy telling the girls they had to kick rocks. Like, it was my thing. It was my groove, and that was my role, to always be in a bad mood and be a smartass about it, and I enjoyed that.
So I'm curious because...
Still that way.
You talk about all of those big men in WWE being a roadblock for you, but exactly what you suggested could happen, which is all the big men coming out and laying down for you and letting you go over, is happening right now with Braun Strowman. So when you see a character on TV like Braun Strowman, which is a role you could have very easily played, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's the perfect role for Braun. I think that's... Could you see Braun? The thing is about entertainment is finding a niche and getting where it's at. I think he's in a good spot, but if it ever changes, here's the thing. Like, the Funkasaurus could lose a match and then still cheer for him. If Braun doesn't capture the championship, it doesn't run over everybody for a long time, then his character gets stuck after he starts losing. When you're undefeated and you're a monster and you're killing everybody, you are the attraction. You are the man. But as soon as those shoulders get pinned or you tap, the mindset of the fans change. So as long as the writing is behind you and the push is there, it's a great situation to be in. And the fact that Big Show and Mark and those guys are doing business, that's what I call it, doing business or whatever, to build him, it's smart. You know, it's also... You know, it's 4 or 5 years. It's 5 years from when, or 4 years, 4 years from when my time was there, and 5 years when I was coming up. So, you know, Father Time is kind of etched up on Show and Mark, and I'm sure they're looking to do other things. They could do more ambassador work and stuff like that. But then at that time, they weren't going anywhere. Big Show just people power and all that kind of stuff. Like he was reinvented, and he was scary again. I mean. So the timing of everything, you know, timing is everything. And Braun right now, no one's really challenging him as far as size-wise, stuff like that, other than guys like the Big Show. And to be honest, I don't watch the product that much. I check on Kurt quite a bit, and I always look on Big E and Keith when I can, but I don't religiously watch the product, because it's just like when you play in the NFL or anything like that, you just don't always watch it for a while. You know, it'll be a few years before I start watching new stuff. I watch the old stuff when I can, but, you know, I've just been spending all my time in the damn gym and trying to be the best I can be for this TV show I do.
Right, so you've got so many friggin' projects that I want to talk to you about, and I mentioned this role in WWE you could have played being Braun Strowman, but a role that you have definitely been sort of goading Marvel to let you play is something in their Marvel Universe film franchises. If you could pick one of the characters in the Marvel Universe to play on screen, who would it be?
It would be probably the new Abomination when he has a little more personality. When he's blue opposed to the midget guy he would have been. DC, it has to be Gorilla Grodd. It just has to be. I think it's Solomon Grundy, too. That'd be fun.
But that's DC.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, Marvel is, because, you know, for a long time, everyone was like, oh, you need to be famous or whatever, but I'd like to revamp Juggernaut. I think that would be cool. Because in the comic books, he's Xavier's brother. He needs to get a little more, you know, Hulk, Sun, Star. There's a ton of different bad guys out there, but something fun like that would be cool.
Yeah, I saw you mention on one episode of Greg Gutfeld that you wanted to play the Red Hulk.
Yeah, the Red Hulk would be great.
I was just really curious about that. And is your affection for comics lifelong?
Yeah, my whole life I've been into like the fantasy stuff like that. You know, I'm a reader. I've always been a reader. It's a great getaway. I've always had a big, crazy imagination, and just been obsessed with the Hulk in Venom, my two favorites, and Planet Hulk is my favorite. I think I've read that probably 50 times. And it keeps getting better.
Now, meanwhile, well, what I've seen publicly is
I did play my first comic book character.
I was
in I'm Hellguard in Preacher, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just that was my next question is that you've got this. So far, a 3-episode arc on Preacher on AMC, which just got renewed for a third season. And I was wondering if you will be back on that.
Yeah, I mean, Les Hell blew up. But the good thing about Preacher is you're there until you get killed. So, unless you're like a jackass or something, just blow it. But, you know, Eugene escapes at the end, so I don't know if we got to go catch his ass or what. But it's an exciting, fun series to be a part of, so. Hopefully they bring Hellguard back because we started to grow a little bit. So
you mentioned Glow is coming back. Glow, you had a 2-episode appearance on that, and it has gotten rave reviews, and they are renewing it for a new season. So will you be back with that as well?
Looks like it, yeah.
So tell me what it was like filming that series, working with a lot of people who are within the wrestling industry and a number of people who aren't.
First of all, me and Carlito are thick as thieves anyways, and we had a lot of fun. And then Chavo, he's Chavo. Chavo has been a major influence in my entire career. Like, he was, when I first came up on the road in the WWE, Chavo was, he was one of those guys that showed me the ropes, called him El Presidente. He's just a good dude. I used to roll around with him up in, it's close by San Diego. My mind's slipping me right now, but like, I've known him for years, and he's just been, and then he was the coordinator there, and he pretty much was like, we need, you know, Tyrus for this. And the first episode was pretty simple, but my facial expressions had everybody laughing. So then when we came back, the montage, they let me and Carlito just kind of screw around and do our thing, and then we just started ad-libbing some stuff, and it just kind of grew. I didn't think much of it, but, like, so many people were like, man, I love that character, man. Like, your Star Wars shit was, I mean, people were just like blowing me up over that. And I didn't think because of the overwhelming story of Glow is so cool, I didn't think that, you know, would make much of a difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, they might go, oh yeah, you know, I know that guy, whatever, but, you know, to the point where they actually come back, that's, you know, that's pretty cool. Because it's, the focus of the show is about women of wrestling and stuff they're going through, and that's where it should be. So it's nice to be, you know, a part of that and add some memorable moments, which I'm pretty proud of that, because comedy's more, it's harder roles for me to get in comedy, because physically, unless I'm doing stand-up or I'm cracking jokes or doing my stuff on the Greg Gutfeld Show, I really don't get a chance to show off that side of myself. So it's important for me to be a part of things like that.
Right. It definitely builds your brand and builds your ability to show a range of characters,
like,
you can play.
I would rather do a remake of Uncle Buck than I would want to do a remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's marks, that's where I'm at, you know, or playing, like, a chance to be, let my sarcasm and my constant negativity, but usually, for whatever reason, they seem to think that to be negative and a smartass, you gotta be, like, small, and that's not how it works. It's having that size allows me to be a smartass, you know, it kind of helps, it, you know, but I don't make the rules up there, I just try to get in where I can fit in.
Well, I think that the idea behind that is if you are 6'9" and 300 and, what did you say, 300 and none of your damn business pounds?
Yeah. Yeah. A little while, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the idea is that when a guy is that big and if he's negative and sarcastic, it's frightening versus a guy who's like a pipsqueak, who's negative. You're just like, you know, the idea is that he voices something and he could be crushed at any moment. You kind of have the leeway to say whatever the hell you want, and nobody's going to say
it's
much about it.
Delivery, you know, like, there's something to be about complaining. If you're going to complain, you have to be non-confrontational in your complaining, but, you know, timing, because you can go from complaining to, like, venting, and nobody wants to hear a big guy vent, so.
Listener Shannon Cook has asked whether you consider your primary career now to be a professional wrestler or as a Fox News analyst. And at what point did you decide to sort of make the jump from one to the other?
Well, I got a chance to act when I was in the WWE with No One Lives. And, I mean, I did theater in college. But, again, I would be reading for Othello, and they'd be like, soldier. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, I saw that. So you say that once on an interview.
Legit, but you can be the understudy. And I had to help his ass understand the words, and it was like, bruh. Oh, man. Like, I forget that dude's name, but when he was like, well, why do y'all go do it? I'm like, that's the damn point of the whole play. Moron. Like, never mind. Let me just stand here and guard this. and that was as my sense, like, that's why I love Kirby Enthusiasm so much, because that's generally how me and my friends are. It's pretty similar to that. The outfit tracking thing had me crying because I had just screamed at one of my friends who always mentioned. So I went out and I bought, you'll see I'm in gray sweatshorts all the time, these baggy gray sweatshorts I get in L.A. when I'm home. And so I got, like, 8 pairs of them. So it's all the same color, but they're my favorite shorts, and I can wear them as many times as I want to because it's a different one. But they're always like, why do you always wear the same shorts? I don't, and quit tracking my outfits. So it's always, like, very much a creature habit. But acting, I wrote my own play in college. I've done stand-up a few times. In high school, I won a talent show. So I just kind of, you know, when I got into sports and stuff, I just kind of got away from it for a little while. Football, you know, complete. You really can't do much else when you're playing ball, trying to play football. And so when I'm wrestling, I kind of put it all together, and I could be the stuff that you guys don't see. If they ever release the Wednesday promos and Dusty Rhodes Class and FCW, like, I would stand up every week and the stuff we like to, and he would give us roles in movies and stuff to play and challenge us to be different characters and stuff, and really just make you comfortable and be in front of the crowd. So, I mean, it was something I always wanted to do, and, like, you know, The Rock kind of blazed the trail, and I still train at Hard Knock South, so I talk to Cena every now and again, and I really like what he's doing. He's found his niche to just show up in a movie, wreck shop, and then go home. But he's doing it, and I'm real excited for him with his Bull movie that's coming out, which I read that book when I was a kid, so I remember that story, so that'll be really good for him. So I'm just kind of finally trying to find my own way, because I'm doing the political comedy stuff on Fox News, and no one else is doing that. So I'm kind of like, you know, I'm getting my movie parts, and I'm just kind of building my resume up. You know, unfortunately, I didn't have the exposure that The Rock and John had, but I'm doing my own thing, my own way, which is kind of cool.
Fox News is notoriously tends to go right. Greg,
yeah, it's so right, it's almost left, I know.
Greg Gutfeld leans right, but your politics on the show seem to be a bit more centrist.
Yeah, I'm in the middle on everything. I don't belong to anything. I don't think you can. I think the way I look at politics is I'm independent because everything with me is a case by case. If you look at everything for what it is, politics shouldn't be like sports. It shouldn't be your favorite football team. Like, I'm a Republican, so therefore, whatever they do, I'm down with, and whatever the Democrats do, I'm against. That's a disservice to yourself. Like, you got to think, and you got to look at things. And sometimes you'll see things that benefit you from that side, and other times you see things that benefit you from the other side. But to be all in on something like politics is just, it's insanity to me. And it's personal for me. I can look at it, and the decisions that Donald Trump makes, the decisions that senators make, they're not going after me. They're doing what they want to do, what they feel for their base, and if it affects me, cool. If it doesn't, then I'll talk about it. So I think I try to look at it like, you know, you can only control what you control, and focusing on your life is more important than focusing on stuff that they're doing up the hill. And some of it will affect you and some of it won't, and mainstream media sometimes can be a little too far, a little too crazy liberal about some of the things and just the climate of stuff. So, yeah, because when I first got on Fly, I got a lot of flack from friends and stuff because they're like, oh, well, you know, they're not, they only have a certain kind of brother on there. I said, well, no, they don't. They got me. So we'll open doors. So I'm not going to change who I am. And I think that's why Greg brought me on, is he saw that I was different. But you can disagree and have a conversation and be friends. Greg and I don't always agree on a lot of things, but I can have a conversation with him and laugh about it and disagree and not want to burn his house down. And I think that's a problem in this country. I think that's why we're having so much success as far as rating and stuff goes, because we are looking at different things without getting into shouting matches, and we can laugh about it. So at the end of the day, can you really control what the government's going to do? No. And bitch about it when you don't like it and praise it when you do like it, but don't take it so seriously.
I really am so hesitant to, like, step on this landmine, but I don't think it will. But really, I think that the reason so many people do take a lot of things personally is because right now decision-making is, I think, affecting large swaths of the country in terms of whether that's race-related things or because of sexuality-related.
We're a very divided country right now. Let's just bring it out in the open. We're a very divided country. And when we had 8 years of a great human being. Like, Barack Obama was a role model in terms of, as a family man, as he came to work, as he spoke, he was always eloquent, he always said the right thing. Even when he was wrong, he owned it. I think he was despised in his own party, because sometimes when you're the star, everyone else around you is bitter or whatever, but then the country just kind of bit into, like, I think having the first of anything, there's always going to be a certain part of our population that feels like that means if something's new, that means that they're old or they're going to be replaced. And I think that fear that a lot of, that 30% of Americans felt, or 20% or whatever, that felt change and they felt like they were being moved out and it became a race thing, and then Donald Trump came along, who was completely non-political in the sense, like, he just said a bunch of stuff, and he was going to change all this stuff, and he was going to knock the government on their ass, because they pretty much blamed the government for all their miscomings or, you know, situations or whatever. And the way the country is acting now is, it just, here's the thing, you don't have to like Donald Trump, I get it. He says things, he does things that you have to scratch your head at, to put it politely. But if you want to get things done, you can't just say, like, oh, the hell with it, because, or screw him, or I hate this, or whatever, because here's the thing. You can vote. You can mobilize. You can know what your senators are doing. You can know what the House of Representatives are doing. You can educate yourself so you can have a dog in the fight. And I think the one good thing about Donald Trump being president is that he's showing people that anybody can do this. Like, you know, like, if you look what we had in Virginia, history was made because people felt like, you know what, I don't see eye to eye on anything that Donald Trump does or his agenda or his base wants. So, you know what, I'm going to run. I'm going to take my destiny in my own hands. And look what's happened. So I tend to look at things, if you don't like his if you don't like their agenda, he was elected by, you know, the United States, by, he was voted in by his peers. He didn't win by the popular vote. That was the first time that's happened in this country. And he had an agenda that he ran on, so we can't be surprised when he's running that agenda. Do I agree with most of it? No. Do I like most of it? No. But I respect the office, and I respect the vote. And a lot of people who are upset, like, just keeping it real, they didn't vote. So you can't, you really can't talk shit if you didn't do anything about it. So now people are mobilized. And the one mistake I think that Donald Trump and his base does is they're kind of sore winners. And the thing about a sore winner is you motivate the ones that you're calling losers. You make it, it's just like the movie. In every movie, when the villain kills the family and leaves the son, what is that? What does the son become? He comes back as a hero and faces it. And that's kind of like the same thing what's going on here. Here's the thing. Whatever, it's 4 years. It can be changed. It can be fixed. You can change votes and stuff like that, but at the same time, America also needs to look at your senators. You need to pay attention to what they're voting on, what their stuff is. You have to be involved. It's a mixed bag, and I get people's frustration, and I get that anger, and it's on both sides. But there was also that there with Barack Obama. There was also that there with George Bush. There's always going to be, when people don't get their way, they're going to be upset.
First and foremost, I want to say that I am probably, by most people's standards, let's just go right straight to the fact that you've seen my Twitter pictures, right? You know, you follow me on Twitter, you follow me on social media. Yeah. You're aware of who I am.
I'm from California, so it's nothing new to me.
Right.
If I was in Iowa, maybe I would have an issue, but...
But I think, yeah. You know, I think that I would also, even as a very liberal person, agree with the idea and concept that when it comes to voting across the board, it, you know, voting, oh, Democrats like this? Yes. Republicans like this? No. Is not healthy, and that's never been my perspective on politics. I just think that what is happening for people, probably in much the same way as you voiced when Barack Obama was in office, and there were so many changes that were seemingly extremely radical in advances socially and economically for people who were underrepresented previously. The people who, I remember a saying that when you've always come from a place of privilege, equality feels like oppression. Or
a step back.
Right, it's a step back. Because all of a sudden, the playing field has been more leveled. And I think that what is so startling is that for many people who were given a step forward towards equality, that there's now a significant threat to even those smaller advances. That's why people are so scared. That's why people are so startled.
Right, and I think it doesn't. Here's the thing: we've had. I thought we were getting to a place of more equality, where transgendered and the LGBT community had more acceptance, and you could marry whoever the hell you wanted to. I thought we were getting to that place, but there's a part of this country that scares them, and for me, that blows my mind, because if I'm not gay, that's not my issue. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm saying that, like, I don't care who you have in your bedroom. I don't care who you marry. I don't, like, whatever makes you happy, as long as it's not hurting other people, then go for it. And I think that's kind of the way we were going in this country, where live and let live, and everybody has the right to prosper and be happy and love and raise a family however they want to. But there's this part of this family, and a lot of us, they hold on to these core values because we're just not exposed to it, and then guys exploit it, they run on it, and we get so divisive in this country, and it just blows my mind. You know, like, I'm always asked, like, what's my position on abortion? What's my position on this? And my thing is, like, that's a woman's choice. I don't have anything to do. I'm not a woman. I can't get pregnant. I can't make that choice. And so, for me, I don't think I should factor in those decisions. Those are something that a woman that needs to be made by women. If a man and a man would like to marry themselves, and that's what they'd like to do, I don't feel that I should be involved in that decision. If it supports it, it's not hurting anybody, I'm good with it. Fine, I'll vote for it. You know, but I'm also like that with drugs too. If you want to smoke weed, I don't think you should go to jail. You know, there's just a lot of, I have like a sort of, I'm conservative in the sense I don't want the government regulating all my stuff, but I'm liberal in the sense like live and let live. Just as long as your stuff doesn't conflict with mine. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, you know what I mean? anything to hurt my way of life, I'm not going to hurt your way of life. And I think we've kind of got back to where everyone's building up walls again. And if you're not like me, there's something wrong with you. And that type of paranoia and stuff doesn't help anybody. Every time you take one step forward, you take two back, I feel like sometimes.
Yes, agreed. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. On episode 10 of Arm Drag Takedown, we have scheduled SmackDown Women's Champion Charlotte Flair is going to be with us talking about her new book, Second Nature, written with her father, Nature Boy Ric Flair, and the December 14th WWE Tribute to the Troops. To never miss an action-packed episode of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM. And now back to the exclusive Arm Drag Takedown interview with former WWE and Impact Wrestling superstar, Tyrus.
Because I was anti-abortion for a while, but my reasons were different. I didn't think it was fair as an athlete and a person, like if you're a target, because there is not all women, let me just get that out there, but there's a small percentage that seems to think they're having a baby by a certain somebody in the real team. Frustrating and dangerous.
I think that's a lot of people.
Small percentage, 0.5 or something like that of the population. So ladies, I'm not calling anybody gold diggers. So I was like, it's not fair that they get to make that decision. So I thought, I came up with the Sean Kemp Act, where it was like, well, I have a right. If you have a right to decide whether you keep it or not keep it, then I have a right to whether I financially keep it or not keep it. So I should be allowed to abort financially. And you're like, well, I've decided I'm not going to keep it. Sorry. Like, I should have the same rights that you have. And that was my thought. That was my thought process. But now I'm older and wiser. I'm just like, if a woman's right, it's her body. I don't think a man should ever tell a woman what she can and can't do with her body. Just like, it's as simple as, like, I'm so sensitive, I don't want nobody telling me whether to put the seat up or not. Like, that's who I am. You're not going to tell me what I need to do with my body, and so, therefore, I'm not going to sit there and tell somebody what to do with their body. We had this settled. We had Roe versus Wade. It was settled, and I think a lot of times people using that as a cop-out, because I'm like, I've yet to see a lot of the pro-lifers who are like, well, I've adopted 6 boys. I've adopted 6 children. So there's no reason to get abortions because you're going to adopt all these children. But they don't ever do that. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of hypocritical.
Right.
In my opinion. So,
it's like, you need to have the baby, and then that's somebody else's problem. But you cannot adopt it if you are gay. You cannot.
You can have the baby, but then, you know, screw him. He's on his own, basically, because, you know, it's a tough time right now. It's a tough time to be a woman right now. It's a tough time to be different because it just seems like everything's so polarized. But these things change. You know, that's a good thing about the United States. We tend to eventually get it right. Just at least hopefully it doesn't take, you know, 10 years to get it right. Hopefully we can just right the ship and get back to supporting each other and being able to have a conversation and not end friendships and marriages over political beliefs. So to me, it's just insanity. But, you know, whatever. I'll get it.
I wanted to ask you real quick. Obviously, you've been long associated with Snoop Dogg.
Yep.
And you mentioned him several times already in this interview, but what do you think of his new cooking show with Martha Stewart?
I love it. I was supposed to be on it, but unfortunately, due to brand stuff, you know, like I'm like, but I'm fighting next. Martha Stewart is she's a wonderful woman, and I met her on her show. Snoop came on to cook when I was working for. And she took me into her office, and she was like, check out my Emmys. And I was like, damn, like, she was gangster cool. And then when I was looking at her pictures on the wall, I had no idea that she was, like, a 10 before a 10. Like, I thought there was only Sophia Loren. No, Martha Stewart got, like, wow, beautiful. Like, wow. I had no idea. So looking at all the black and whites and stuff in her office, I'm like, wow. And I'm trying to, you have to be polite because it's Martha Stewart. And, you know, and she was so down to earth and just so real. And I think that's why her and Snoop work so well together, because she's just cool. And, I mean, she's got stripes. She's been in the penitentiary. Like, She's just cool.
You said she'd been to the penitentiary. Fuck.
I'm just saying, like, I dig Martha Stewart, man. I dig her. And as far as being an entrepreneur and stuff, like, she's just ahead of her time, and she's a trendsetter. And if people don't realize, if she's not eventually recognized for her contributions, her husband, like, I think she got divorced, he left her with nothing, and she built it all herself. I mean, like, next level.
Now that you have said that she used to be hot back in the day, it explains why a couple of the rappers have said that they, like, want to get with her. I was like, what the fuck?
Look her up, bro. Don't believe me. Look her up. Google her back in the day. I mean, she's pretty. She's a beautiful woman now. She's aged well. But I'm just saying, like, go back. You're going to be like, whoa. Ask any older guy. Ask any older guy who knows anything. They'll tell you.
Well, I mean, I ain't going to want to
see. Like Martha Stewart. Like, huh. But when you see you, like, oh, Martha Stewart. Like, she's gorgeous.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to want to get with her, but, you know, I can understand the other side.
She's a G, too. She's not exactly wanting to need anything. She's Martha Stewart, so ain't nobody getting a date. So let's just keep that real. But you know what? I'm, like, when it comes to, like, I think Whoopi Goldberg is beautiful. Like, I'm, man, just my thing. I just like all kinds of women. I just think women are beautiful. I'm lucky, you know, that I got beautiful women in my world. But, I mean, women are beautiful, you know, in their own ways, and look different, like, you know. Like, I watched Misery, and I was like, Kathy Bates is cute. Like, I just see things, I guess just because I'm big as hell, I don't know, but I just see things differently. But Martha Stewart is next level gorgeous, looks like she's like a model. Check it out. Keep it real.
Check it out. Fuck, you said Whoopi you said Kathy Bates in Misery. Damn. Okay.
Yeah, who? Oh, you shaming? You shaming, bro? You judging?
I'm not judging. I mean...
Okay. That's yeah, I said it out there. Kathy Bates, Whoopi Goldberg are pretty. I'm saying. I can live with that.
I will give Kathy Bates this. That's a bitch who knows how to keep a man. Break your damn ankle.
Yep.
Speaking of beautiful women. Speaking of beautiful women, Sasha Banks has, you know, been very open about being Snoop's niece, and I was wondering during your time working with him, what your pre-WWE memories of Sasha were.
Well, I met Sasha not through actually Snoop. Her father would talk to me about her all the time, but I had met her. We had corresponded. I think it was on maybe Twitter or something. She had a tryout, and we had met. And then she had a second tryout, and then we were coming to Boston, and they didn't ask her back. And she called me, and she was like, "Is there anything?" I just need, like, I don't understand why she wasn't getting signed, because I was trying to see if we could get her in. Bring her in as a Funkadactyl or something. Like, I just thought she was crazy talented. And I went to Mr. William Regal and told him, and he was like, he'd see what he could do. And she got another look, and she knocked it out of the park in Boston. And, you know, the rest was history. But, I mean, she just made history. I just tweeted, you know, she was, I think it was the first female match in Abu Dhabi, I want to say. Can't remember. But
I think it's Abu Dhabi, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Dubai, maybe.
You said Abu Dhabi.
You know, because that was one of the things that hurt me and the Funkadactyls is we couldn't go on those tours. I think it's great that they, you know, trendsetter, they're, you know, they're changing the world, and that's a positive thing, and more people should be talking about that, you know. Inequality's happening all over the world, so that's a good thing. But she's very talented, and I haven't spoken to her in a few years, but she's doing her thing, and she got in there, and shot him. I mean, honestly, the first time she had a tryout, she probably got signed up or sometimes. Takes a few times, but the last one in Boston, she knocked it out of the park. So
final question. You mentioned that you're training hard. You want to get back in the ring. Whether it's because Impact has once again changed directions and changed ownership and changed management, or through independent opportunities, where will we see you back in a ring?
You know what? I haven't made a decision yet. There's a couple possibilities out there. And I forgot to wait till after the new year before I make any decisions. And I won't tell anyway. I'll just show up, and if you're watching, you'll be like, damn, that's where he's at. So could be anywhere. But don't call the comeback because I've been here. I just took a break. So get my mind right.
Yeah, I mean, you just left in August. You just left in August. It's not like...
I get famous, so I get that push, you know. So I'll show you.
Right. Well, from a cross-promotional marketing opportunity, with all of your films coming up and your television work, any company would seemingly be smart to have you on their roster, if not have you in a championship role, just to be able to promote their brand wherever you go.
Yeah, so that's what I'm banking on. Oh, and it helps good too, but...
Yeah, right, hey, you're good.
You know what? I got 15 minutes to get my ass across the street and shoot the show, hanging out with you. It started at 5:45, but I'm only across the street, so it's cool. But yeah, man, hit me back anytime. This is the first interview I've probably done. I've been ducking and dodging them, so... This is the first time I talked about the Jeff Jarrett thing, so have fun with that.
Oh, trust me. Just so you know, yeah. And I appreciate it, because next week, this is a big lead-in for me. Next episode, I've got Charlotte Flair. That is a fucking unbelievable accomplishment for me. And I interviewed her a few years ago, and now the biggest name in women's wrestling. Sorry, Sasha. Biggest name in women's wrestling right now, and I'm so excited. So thank you for joining me, and thank you for providing a killer interview to lean into that.
Come on, man. Hit me back anytime.
All right. Get over to that show, and I will talk to you later.
All right, bro.
Bye. And that wraps up episode 9 of Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I'm Poyo Del Mar. We just heard from former Impact Wrestling and WWE superstar Tyrus. Follow him on Twitter to keep abreast of all of the activities in his busy acting career, as well as to stay tuned for when he will return to a ring near you. He is found at Planet Tyrus. Planet Tyrus on Twitter. It's super easy. While this episode was being edited and recorded, we got breaking news that Rich Swann, who was scheduled to face Drew Gulak on the upcoming episode of Monday Night Raw to determine which of the two would face Enzo Amore for the Cruiserweight title, has been suspended by WWE. He was arrested, booked, and released in Gainesville, Florida, which is very close to my hometown of Ocala, Florida, for allegedly assault as well as adult kidnapping for an incident with his wife, who is also a fellow professional wrestler. This information is all breaking and developing. I don't want to go into a great deal of detail about this situation because we are still finding out new information, but what I will say is, you know, WWE is pissed right now because they've done a 3-week build with their 2 4-man matches leading to the culmination on Monday, which was supposed to be Gulak versus Rich Swann, and the winner going on to face 205 Live champion Enzo Amore. I always thought Drew Gulak was going to win that and set up an awkward confrontation between him and the rest of the Zoe train and Enzo Amore. But you have got to know that right now, regardless of what comes of this situation legally for Rich Swann, and things could get bad if his wife continues to move forward with this, and in many situations, possibly especially in Florida, where we also recently saw the whole thing go down between Alberto El Patron and Paige, even if his wife drops the charges or does not want to pursue them, the state could very well continue to move forward on this, because often places have in effect laws which prevent potential victims of domestic violence from being forced to actively accuse their aggressor, meaning that the person who is being attacked doesn't even have to press charges. There are a lot of states out there which will allow a woman or a man in this type of situation to drop those charges, but often it's taken into consideration that victims of domestic violence do not want to pursue and further aggravate situations of this nature with an aggressive spouse, partner, or friend, even if that's the case, which then allows the state to continue to pursue legal actions on their behalf without their consent. Either way, it doesn't matter what the legal outcome of this is going to be for Rich Swann. He's clearly suspended for the moment without pay from WWE. Obviously, he's out of the finale of this little tournament sort of thing that they had. And when he comes back, you know he's going to be in deep shit, because WWE gives a significant amount of thought to where their stories are going creatively. And to have something of this nature ruin a storyline that has become major for an already struggling product like 205 Live is not going to set well with anyone up in Stanford. Rich Swann, your goose is cooked. Oh, I do not envy him in this situation. I certainly, if it is proven true that the accusations made against him are valid, I feel very bad for his wife because they're recently married. They've only been together 9 months, and so things surely have taken a turn for the worse in this brand new marriage. His wife did tell the police that, you know, sometimes he has issues with anger. There's a little bit of culpability there that she continued forward with the relationship, if that's the case, and went ahead and married the guy. But still, nobody out there deserves acts of violence against them. So if Rich Swann, in fact, forcibly pushed his wife back into a car and took her with him wherever they might have gone, that's a situation that I don't envy her to be in. I hope that if it's true, she gets the hell out, because things usually only go downhill from there. But we will continue to monitor this as it is a story that is developing even as I'm recording this. Meanwhile, remember, Charlotte Flair is going to be on episode 10. God, I cannot wait. That interview will possibly be already recorded by the time you're listening to this. Be sure to follow and subscribe on Facebook at ADT with PDM. Follow me personally on Twitter, the Glamazon PDM. I'm Poyo Del Mar. And as for me and this episode, you can stick a fork in me, honey, because I am done.